Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Locked on Nation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor. Got quite the show coming up for you today. We're going to kick it off with a Patreon question of the week. The Open at Austin happened. A lot of stuff going down with the Manufacturers Cup, a little Trevor's trivia. I'm going to talk about running a tournament this weekend, and then we're going to finally update the top 10 power rankings now that we're a few events into the season and have a little bit better grasp on what's going down out there. But first, quick word from our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Chip Locked. I didn't misspeak. Chip Locked is a basically like a poker chip game. It's a company focused on throwing more fun into your round by celebrating the good throws, laughing at the bad breaks, and a fun competition, all while challenging yourself to reach new goals. It also helps even the playing field between players of various skill levels, allowing everyone to complete. It comes with 18 unique chips. You have some good chips and you have some bad chips. A good example of a chip would be Dethroned, which is when you go from first on the tee to the last on the next tee.
Love it.
You would get the Dethroned chip. And there's a bunch of different ways to score. You can head over to chiplocked.com. That's chip as in like poker chip, locked.com, and see all the different ways that like scoring can work. You can either get like bogey or like positive strokes for bad chips, negative strokes for good chips, or you can just go off a chip count. You can go off a bunch of different ways to play the game. And in addition to just their normal game, they also have season-long badges.
These are cool.
They have your advanced pack, which is this yellow one. They also just have your beginner pack here. Season badges are like merit badges you can challenge yourselves to achieve and show off on your bag. And the badges come in two different packs. Like I said, the beginner and the advanced pack, so people of all skill levels can enjoy. They can also be used as a season-long game with friends to play for ultimate bragging rights.
Yeah, those are Velcro, so you just stick them on your bag.
Let me rip one. You rip one open.
Yeah, I'll rip it open for you. I think this is one of the coolest things. You have like your normal game going on with the chips, but then like, you know, throughout the season, you can rep these on your bag. So like you show up and with all your buddies that play this, and you've got just like all the sick patches on your bag. Like, I think that's really cool. I think that's super fun. It looks like we've got all kinds of different ones in here. But yeah, I think that's a really fun way. I think this is like,
there's even a lost disc badge in the beginner pack.
It's great. Oh, that's fun.
I just think I think
first
this is
available
a blast.
Badge. They're pretty fun.
I don't know what this like nuke with the explosion on the back. Okay, that's what I want to get. What is this one here? This is the bomber badge. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want? I got the bomber badge, the full flight badge, the seeing circles badge, the round killer badge.
Round killer's the five
the bushwhacker plus. Badge funny. And the ace badge. That's cool. I think it's a lot of fun.
So if you want to have a lot of fun like we are right now, you can head over to chiplocked.com to find how to play out all their different products, the different ways to play, and all that stuff. Or you can also follow them at chiplocked over on Instagram for fun disc golf content and new product launches. So throw more fun in your round with Chiplocked.
Today's video is sponsored by Mudwater. All right, as some of you may know, I recently had a newborn baby, and with that comes lack of sleep and the need for energy. And here's the thing, energy drinks are not the best solution. All that caffeine can make you jittery, it can get you some serious crashes, and that's why Mudwater is an excellent alternative. Mudwater is super, super simple to make, and it gives a great boost of energy with natural ingredients. Each ingredient in this blend was added for a purpose. They've got cacao and chai for a hint of caffeine and a little bit of that hot chocolate flavor, lion's mane for focus, cordyceps to promote natural energy, and both chaga and reishi to support a healthy immune system. Now, I know what you're thinking. Natural energy made up of mushrooms called mud water. How does it taste? I actually quite like it. I think it kind of tastes like a chai tea latte, which I really love. Like any kind of healthier beverage, it was a little intimidating at first, but once I tried it, I realized I loved it. Making it is super easy. You just take a scoop of your mud water. I like to throw it in some hot water and then mix it up. Like I said, has a great taste. I think those of you who are coffee drinkers could find this as an easy alternative. You still get that warm, yummy beverage. You can make this a ton of different ways. They offer other products like creamers as well to help sweeten things up. And I really like it just as it is as well.
Smells good.
Yeah, it does. Plus, this thing is healthy, okay? This is certified USDA organic. It's Whole30 approved. It's vegan approved. It's gluten-free. It really checks all those boxes. So if you're looking to kick the energy drinks, find an alternative to that coffee and those jittery moments and those crashes that are associated with it, like I was being sleep deprived with a newborn baby, Mudwater is a special offer that they're hooking up with our viewers with. If you go to mudwater.com/foundation, you can get started for just $29. That's Mudwater spelled MUDWTR.com/foundation, and you can get started for just $29. Thanks again to Mudwater for sponsoring this video. I'm gonna enjoy this mug.
All right, let's get into the Patreon question of the week. This one came from Mario Bichart. He said, if you would be given a free trip to any non-U.S. course in the world, which one would you visit? Or just what exotic country do you want to play disc golf in?
Mm.
I mean, non-U.S. course has got to be the Beast.
Either that or wasn't. What's the
yours
other
is probably
one?
The Kona Piste.
Yeah, mine was the Kona Piste. Yeah,
is that Franz Ferdinand? Or is that a different one?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Franz Ferdinand is the one that comes to mind, and I can't remember if that's the Kona Piste course or not.
I think so.
Because I think that would actually be it for me.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
Yeah, I would want to play the Beast just because I've seen it so much, so many times. There's also, I think, is it Tampere or whatever disc golf centers, like that new place is going to. But they'd be somewhere in the Scandinavian area. Mm. Some, or even they have those like the Åland Islands or whatever, where there's like different, isn't like a disc golf course like on every island or something like that?
I forget what it is,
but like you can like go and like travel from island to island and play a bunch of disc golf.
I'd probably just go to Park Circle in Charleston.
That's another good option. Though they said non-US. We all would have chosen that.
I'm just dying to get back to Park Circle, man. I'm dying.
I heard that there's rumor might not exist for too much longer. So if you're in anywhere near Charleston,
that'd break my heart.
Get it in there. Well, right. I mean, it makes sense.
It does.
You're playing around a giant traffic circle.
So much fun.
And like they probably need parking for all a bunch of stuff. And there's a lot of land right there.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame.
That's just right now just a disc golf
it's
course.
A darn
so.
Shame.
But it's a fun place. Fun course. And you can swing by Foundation Charleston while you're down there.
You almost
get
hit by a car every time you go to the next level.
Yeah. And your disc almost hits a car every time you mess up.
It's very good.
A lot
very
of fun. Stuff. A lot of fun to be had there. Where else was there a lot to be fun to be had? Austin, Texas, this past weekend. The Open at Austin
Stay
went
weird,
down.
Austin.
Open at Austin went down on FPO side. You had Owen Scoggins taking it down. Kristen Tatar coming in second. Missy Gannon coming in third.
Dude, if she starts playing bad, we've got something.
That's fine. And then on the MPO side, you had Nicholas, Kyle Klein, and Calvin for your top three over there. But we got to talk FPO first. Owen Scoggins put up an all-time performance out there. She won.
Crazy.
By 11 strokes. Kristen Tatar was in this field. Again, she came in second. Owen Scoggins won by 11 strokes. And the crazier part to me is she was 4 strokes back after round one.
Yeah.
So she went 3 under round one, 13 under round two, 10 under round three to get to 26 under for the event. Absolutely bananas performance out there.
Yeah, Owen put us on notice a little bit because we rate, you know, Owen Scoggins pretty high in that FPO field because she's one of the few consistent players. I think this round would have surprised anybody.
Yes.
I mean, just regardless. I mean, it's just an insane round.
Well, two rounds back to back.
Yeah, insane two rounds, really. But I think we maybe didn't throw her. I mean, you threw her into her top three. I think I maybe ignored her because I wasn't sure how she would function on this course. But this course didn't. It was more technical than it looked from a distance, maybe. It was not necessarily a course where you just had to rip it all over the place and, you know, obviously she putts lights out. She made some great putts, keeps the disc in play, and like, yeah, it was just insane. Even for her, like Owen Scoggins, even when she's playing her best, you don't expect her to just go out and torch the course. You expect her to just be consistently good. So
she reminds me, like, she's always been like the Nate Sexton of
FPA. I honestly, like, I don't know, what are we gonna see from Owen Scoggins at this point now? Like that was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised by any means that she won, but winning by 11 over Kristen, very surprising. I do think she's somewhat course dependent just from how forehand dominant she is.
Yeah, it was a good forehand course. You saw it with Marweed.
When her putt catches fire, she's one of the best putters on the planet, period, when her putt catches fire.
And this shows us, this is a good example. A lot of people might be quick to be like, wow, so Kristen, like she got kind of crushed. Like, what does this mean for Kristen? Well, here's the thing. In most, like week to week, what we see most of the time out of FPO is that on a weekend like this, Kristen is the winner of that tournament because nobody goes out and does something crazy like Owen just did. So what it shows you is if you go out there and you have an insane weekend and you really go off, Kristen's very beatable. The problem is, like I said, most of the time that doesn't happen. There's nobody that just goes out there for multiple rounds because in FPO, in a three-rounder, if you do it for 2 out of 3, or in a four-rounder, if you do it for really 2 out of 4, if you just go out there and shred, that can be enough. But you don't see that a ton, and that's where Kristen wins. Because like I said, Owen was just kind of came out of nowhere here, and if she didn't do that, Kristen wins again. We're talking about this the same way we normally do because Kristen will still put up a competitive round. It's just like that's what it takes. It takes somebody to have a huge weekend, go out there and really take it from Kristen. And then it can be done. And I don't think we've ever denied that. The reason we talk about Kristen winning so much is because you don't see that a lot. Like, you don't see FPO players put out multiple huge scoring rounds. And so I think that should be an encouragement, though, to other players, because there are more players that are capable of greatness. It's just a matter of, can they prolong it during the tournament? But that should be encouraging. Hey, Kristen took a loss early. It's not like she's just going to win every single event. She can be beaten. Good for Owen. Owen Scoggins rocks. You know, she's up there in age. She's well into her 40s at this point.
I think so, yeah.
And she just kicks butt. She's a lot of fun to watch. She's got a great attitude. She gets very excited when she wins. Like, Owen Scoggins is very cool.
Yeah.
Big Owen Scoggins fan.
And like you had said, and really, for Kristen Zatar, it came down to round two. She lost 11 strokes in round two, ended up losing 11 overall. She had Owen by two after round one, funny enough. But then Owen went 53 to Kristen 64 in round two, and then 56-58.
Well, and I don't even think Kristen wasn't even the leader after round one.
No,
she?
Yeah. Kat Merch.
Yeah, I'll say Kat Merch was another one.
Kat Merch shot 7 under round one, 7 under round two, and then finished the...
Where did she go? Oh, she's there. She's there in fourth.
There she is. I scrolled right by her. Finished the event at 8 under. So she was at 14 under, shot 6 over final round.
Yeah.
Because she realistically going into the last round where Owen shot 10 under, she was only 2 strokes back of her. Like it didn't look like a bloodbath yet. It just turned into a bloodbath because the people because also, to your point too, Kristen Zatar was 7 strokes back of second going into the final round and closed that 7-stroke deficit to get into second place.
The theme in FPO has been, and listen, I'm not like MPO, we almost had a third card winner. Guys win from further cards back than lead. It's always been a trend in disc golf, at least as of recent, where the lead card is more likely to get cagey and cool off while the second and third card are just pushing, because you're going to have, basically what you have is you got 4 people sitting at the top that can get a little bit of tunnel vision with each other, and they, at least at the beginning of the round, and they're all just kind of playing chess, whereas you've got 8 people behind them, and even more than that, but 8 people that are within reach that are just thinking, I'm going aggressive, and at least a couple of them are going to succeed. And so that happens regardless. But in FPO, I think we've seen that happen more dramatically than in MPO just because there's less players and it's just not as deep as a field right now. And so we've seen consistently the top of the table just crumbling in those later rounds. And it certainly opens the door that if you just hang around and you're willing to fight in that last round, anything can happen.
No, absolutely. So not too much more to really be said about Open and Austin. There was question marks around Paige Pierce was the defending champion. She came in 40th. let's see where Katrina Allen, 7th place. She was back in the mix again.
Yeah, people were starting to say Kat could be back.
Maybe Kat's back. Because, those are your two previous to this year. Like, they were the dogs in the field. They were the people. But it's an uphill battle for them. Because, I already am not really thinking to look for them unless they're up there. Like, it's a nice surprise to see Kat up there.
So weird.
I wouldn't have even really thought Paige Pierce was in this event. Now the people I'm thinking of each week is A, Kristen, but then Owen, Missy, Haley King, Ella Hansen, Holland Handley. Those are the people that I'm consistently thinking of. Hannah Blommers and Evelina should be on that list too. So it's definitely an uphill battle, which obviously Paige is recovering from an injury and has other things like that, but it's an uphill battle for them to get back into that mindset of the fans watching, Paige Pierce could contend every weekend. It's going to be interesting to see.
If you listen to this podcast, 2-3 years ago, just the comparison now to the way we talk about FPO, because we really, when COVID ended is when we really brought in Kristen back into the game. She was only there for a little bit and then COVID hit. Back then it was just talking
about
Paige
and Kat show.
And Kat. Another player that I'm interested to see, and now this is a player who is typically better as we start moving east, but somebody who had a full off season after a little bit of injury troubles last year, is Valerie Mandahano.
Yeah.
Hasn't really shown up a ton yet. Like I said, distance has always been a little bit of an issue. It seems like it does take her a little bit to heat up sometimes during the season, especially once you get to kind of mid, late season. That's where I think she can thrive, but I want to see more out of her because I think there's a lot of players in FPO that are just very close and have some really good abilities, but it's just, it's a little disappointing week to week when you're seeing such a large gap at the top of the leaderboard. You know, that ultimately, and it's one thing when Kristen's doing it week to week, and that's kind of a story in and of itself. But at the end of the day, like, I it's anytime you have a player win by that much, and we're seeing multiple events in a row where, like, there's not a close finish, it's a little disappointing from a viewer standpoint. And that doesn't take anything away from what Owen did. And it was, it's always a spectacle in and of itself when somebody plays that well. But yeah, just lacking drama. We've gotten very spoiled with the MPO so far with the amount of drama we've gotten. And so I'm wanting some FPO drama next week. I want a close finish because we have seen a ton of them in years past. You know, just last year at Waco, we had like a crazy finish. So I'm really hoping next week some people battle at the top.
Well, I'll be curious because next week obviously is U.S. Women's. And yeah, historically, U.S. Women's, what will end up happening,
it groups a ton of people in.
Is
usually.
They go to almost a more scoreable course, yeah. Less OB. It's funny. It's like the anti-U.S. Open. Like yeah. In golf, U.S. Open, everything gets like, it's the hardest, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
U.S. Women's, it's like, it feels
like anybody can win.
It's like the easiest course, like as little separation, but it causes electricity because it causes there to be a lot of, because like, to your point, right, let's take Owen's incredible performance out of it. Let's just say this is a normal FPO week. Mm-hmm. Okay, Owen doesn't go off. You still have Kristen at 15, then 5 strokes to Missy at 10, then you have 3 at 8, and then by the time you get to 7th place, we're already 8 strokes out of it.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to the top 15, we're over par.
Well, the thing is, the bottom line is with the smaller field right now, and it's still developing. You have a lot of players that aren't super consistent, and the FPO field, it's coming along. You know, it'll take time. The MPO field was not always as it is now.
No, absolutely.
But right now, you have this cut line where beneath it, there's going to be a large amount of the field at every event that just is way.
That just never has a chance. Yeah.
Way, way out of the tournament. It's just looking forward to everybody kind of improving and getting better. But I think U.S. Women's, like you mentioned, is one of the most jumbled up leaderboards.
Typically. I'll be curious to see what they do this year because it's in Texas.
Yeah.
I think it's going to Houston, if I'm not mistaken. But I'll be curious kind of what that looks like.
Yeah, because there also has been complaints year to year on U.S. Women's. So we'll see.
Yeah. It seems like the field each year, we'll do a full U.S. Women's preview show, so we'll get into it then. But like, it feels like the field each year wants the difficulty they're used to on tour, but then as fans, it's really exciting when U.S. Women's comes.
And to be fair, like, we got Kristen winning last year, obviously. Yeah. I think
Haley the year before,
Paige the year before that, maybe.
Something like
so,
that.
Like, good players are winning at
and
the end of the day.
And Kristen won 2019.
Yeah. So, it does have a history of really, like, realistic good players winning. It's not like it's, like, Waco or, like, a tournament that's known for just whoever's going to win, so...
Now, on the MPO side, like you've been mentioning, the finish was absolutely electric. So many players
crazy.
Were in it down the stretch. At the very, very end, we had Kyle Klein made it to the clubhouse at 26 under. Calvin Heimberg just had to par 18 to also be at 26 under. He went OB off his drive and then gave himself a circle 2 look to save his par. But
which was crazy.
Missed that. It was a wild
and
shot.
And Kyle also choked on 18 because he threw the tee shot on 18. 18 was a crazy hole. The tee shot there was insane, and Kyle, or no, it wasn't 18 that he choked. It was, what hole was it?
Was it 17?
No, 7, because 17.
Well, it's also weird because we're not looking at actual holes because he skipped.
17 was the tough par 3 that he did
It was
get.
14, which would have been 16, because that he had the perfect drive and didn't get up and down. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's where it was. It was when he was still playing really hot. He piped his drive, like fist pumped, and like it was a beautiful drive, and then didn't get up and down. Yeah, it was that hole. And that was a huge moment there because he had every opportunity to get further under par, but even still, I mean, his charge was insane. 12 under was a crazy round.
And it was 12 under with 3 holes missing because,
He went 12 for 15.
Yeah. Because they had a storm delay, like a 2-hour storm delay, I think.
Yeah.
So they played this final round. I think they said they had 2 hours and 15 minutes from tee off till it got dark.
I've never seen them hustle like that. And you talk about like Gannon and Antela, two guys that are a bit slower on that lead card, and I've never seen those guys hustle. It was like one guy off the tee pad, next guy on, throwing, like, it was like Brody's dream scenario.
Brody was probably sitting back watching his coverage like, finally someone gets it, because it is a tough scene. I won't say fully, I'm going to say tough scene. Like, this
tough
course
scene.
Could have played long, right?
Yeah.
They were still in foursomes. They took 3 holes out, but they played this round in literally, I think, like 2 hours.
It was fast.
Was it just minus three? It was only 3 holes out of it. We'll call it two and a half hours. If you add those 3 holes back in, we'll give them 10 minutes a hole for those three.
Yeah.
I mean,
so fast.
what are the freaking live disc golf haters going to say when the full round's 2.5 hours to sit down and watch coverage and Jomez is an hour and a half? What it could be if people had their pace of play picked up.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
it's wild.
They were motivated out there. Maybe they just need to start every.
They need to start every event.
Needs to tee off.
Yeah.
Racing.
Look,
daylight.
You got 2 hours till it's dark out. So if you want to
make
playing,
it happen,
if you
want
to play glow, take your time.
Dude, the 15 hole thing was crazy because I personally like. I was totally fine with it as a solution. I think
it worked out.
I would say it was a pretty creative solution, honestly.
Because they already had people on the course, and they were trying to figure out how to shorten it.
So I was pretty, like, when I heard it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I respect it. And what it turned into was, like, almost like this sprint. Like, just taking 3 holes out was perfect enough that it still felt like a pretty complete round of golf, but it was just a little bit quicker. Like, you had to get to where you were trying to go a little bit faster, and, it felt like a sprint round of golf, and it was very exciting. And it tied into the way that round was because there were so many people that were in contention. There was just no chance to catch your breath because people were finishing their round so much quicker, and it was like, oh, my goodness. It was wild.
Now we got to talk about the man of the hour, Nicholas Antela. He took down his first win. I think they said the first European. No, because that's not Simon. Must be the first. They said something that they brushed by it and it kept going. Maybe it's just first Finnish player to win a Pro Tour event. Doesn't matter. It's his first Pro Tour event. It feels almost a long time coming, although he's young into his career. Similar to AB. Similar to, like, so many, like, Gannon Burr when he got his first win, where, like, their career hasn't been that long. They've just been close multiple times to where it feels like a long time coming. And I didn't think he was going to do it. So he had a double bogey on 6, which,
double bogey.
You know, that definitely slowed some momentum. He picked it back up. Then, same hole as Kyle Klein missed, hole 14, although the way, which in the round, what gets confusing is that was, like, played as almost hole 16.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Flow-wise. The way Niklas did it, though, was like a literally 17-foot putt airball.
He didn't airball. Wow. He chained it out.
Was it a chain out? Yeah. It was a bad putt.
It wasn't a chain out. Let me be clear. It was a. It barely clipped like the top right and just like
that. You're right.
Off.
You're right.
Yeah.
It was not a good putt.
It was not a good putt. Yeah. It was not a chain out.
It was a missed putt.
It was a missed putt. Yeah. But it was an ugly putt. Like it was one of those putts that I was like, "There's the moment got to him." And so I watched that in my head because at this point. Kyle, I think, had just finished at 26 or was on 18, like, as this happened. I'm pretty sure he just finished at 26 and was watching the coverage. So, Nicholas had to go birdie-birdie to win by one, and he missed that putt, was, like, what made him have to go birdie-birdie. And so, in my head, it was over. The nerves just got to him. Got the birdie on 17. 18 left himself with, right outside the circle's edge. It was tough to see because it was dark.
Yeah, it was, like,
but
a foot out.
A long putt for the win.
In like the dark.
Had he missed it, would have just been a playoff. So it wasn't end of the world if he missed it. Most confident putt I've ever seen someone throw. Just dead center, heart of the chains, no doubt that it was in. And then he just released raw emotion.
It was awesome.
For like the next
huge
5 minutes.
Huge gallery too. Huge gallery. It was a sweet moment.
Once he had the hat on, he just immediately started crying.
It was great.
Wow. It's just what you love seeing. Like, I mean, obviously you don't love seeing people cry, but in this case you do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was just raw emotion of like, you knew how much that win meant to him. And now that it's off his back, I mean, Discmania's got themselves one heck of a team.
This is going to be the season of players just like finally getting that win. Who's next on our list now? Of like the, like if we scroll down a little bit, is there anybody else that
has Marweed got one? He's not really been like in it. Ezra Robinson, I feel like Joseph Anderson could be up there.
Yeah, Ezra Robinson's not a bad one. He's kind of
Gavin.
Oh, Gossage. It's Gossage.
Oh, Gossage.
Gosh is just kind of the next up guy. I feel like who's been around and just needs to get over the hill. Proctor, you could argue as well, but. Yeah, I feel like this season so far, AB and Antela now, it's like, okay, this is getting scary because all these guys who couldn't win before, and like maybe that was your one thing to say going into the final round, like, well, they've never done it before. They're not proven. Well, now they are, and they're going to be all that much more dangerous. And yeah, Antela is awesome. You can tell that he's just put a ton of work into his game. He's just accurate. You know, he's just smooth and accurate. He throws great shots. I mean, some of his turnover backhands and like hyzer flip to turn backhands were so good, throwing some really difficult lines. And that putt, man. He has got a putt that it looks like if he was having a bad day, it would be really hard to control because he uses his wrist as such a heavy lever in that putt. He really pops it. But when it is on, it is a thing of beauty. And he throws some just tremendous putts, and it won him the tournament.
I think he hit a pretty big one early in the tournament, too. It was coverage-wise, everyone was kind of struggling at the exact same time. Like, everyone kind of in the lead or pushing in contention was kind of like starting to crumble a little bit on all these holes, and I think it was to save a bogey or a par from like 50 feet, and it was just a very confident stroke. It must have been to save a par, but a very exciting tournament. I liked the course. I think it was great. I think the changes went well. I didn't hear any grumbling this year. Last year, you heard a lot more grumbling. So I don't know if it just happened behind closed doors or if players liked it too.
Way different. I thought the course was really good. I thought it had a really nice mix of shots. And like I said, it was a very much a placement course. There was a really good variety of lines. It was not just like reach back and rip type course at all. I thought the OB was pretty well placed to where it wasn't unreasonable, but it was there. They put some around greens that made things a little bit of a decision, like do I run it or not. They used the fairways well. They used the course. That course it doesn't just like yell golf course.
Exactly.
It really doesn't. A lot of those shots, just the way they played along that property, it just looked like a solid piece of land, like a cool park. It really didn't seem like, golf course.
It's how Lake Waco felt to me, too.
Yeah, I think that and the Pro Tour, you got to, like, the more and more they do this, they're just going to keep getting better and better. And, hey, it's cool because, like, there was a big gallery and they were able to accommodate that. I mean, I was kind of like, I thought the gallery looked pretty good because you saw cards that were not lead card with good followings, which is going to happen when you get guys like Calvin Heimberg on your chase card. But which he made a great run. Good for him. Good to see him healthy. But I mean, when they panned to the line on 18 at the end, I was like, wow, that might be 300-400 people. Like it was a really, really solid grouping of fans. So yeah, I thought overall it was great. I mean, that event, man, let me tell you, when you're looking at that leaderboard, I'm not even kidding you, when the lead card had like 10 holes to play, there was probably 12 people that could have won that tournament.
No, I thought the event was already called at that point. It was over.
Yeah, well, it was over. Like, I mean, Calvin was cooked, and you know, it was make or break birdie for ABs. I'm not even going to get into that.
No, come on.
No, dude.
This is the spot. This is what people come here
for,
Trev.
No, Twitter was the spot. Listen, the commentary I thought was pretty bad. That's all I'm going to say. If you want to hear me rant live about commentary.
I have to agree with Hunter that this seems like the time to share about that.
This is a safe space.
I try not to make this a commentator slander. Because let me preface this. Commentary is hard, okay? I would not want to be the commentator.
Yeah.
If I did it, I would get slandered too.
But it's a part of the disc golf product, so you have to talk about it.
My biggest gripes with commentary, I'm not going to like dive into anybody's personalities or anything like that, because like it is what it is. My biggest gripes with the commentary overall was the fact that they are just still obsessed. And I think all the commentators do this from time to time. And I think it's just like, I don't think they realize they're doing it either. So I'm going to give them that credit as well. But they love calling it before it's over. And when you have a tournament where there is like 12 guys in it, and like they're constantly watching crazy swings happen. Like Gannon Burr, early in this round, was kind of losing ground, but then all of a sudden Antola takes a double bogey.
Yep.
And then Gannon proceeds to bogey the same hole. Like there are, it can always change. Okay. All it takes is one roll away and a missed putt from short distance, and all of a sudden three stroke swing. Like it can be that quick. And so, I mean, so many times they kept saying this person's out of it, this person. And a lot of times they weren't even like remotely mathematically out of it. It's like, no, they just have to birdie out. And I think what happens sometimes is they look at the scorecard
as is like everyone's on the same hole.
They do that. And then they also look at it as if the person ahead of them is not going to lose any strokes. They just think, okay, they need this many birdies and there's this many holes left. They don't consider the idea that on a very difficult hole 18, somebody might bogey a hole. I find that so silly. So, that was definitely my biggest gripe. And I just kind of was over it by the end of it. I just kept hearing it was frustrating. And like some, at one point somebody used the term make or break birdie, which like people overuse make or break. I even do this sometimes. Make or break means if you don't make it, your round is over. Like that's what it should mean. And it was at a time where if the player made par on that hole, he still just needed to go birdie birdie to tie the lead. Like it wasn't make or break. So yeah, that was my biggest gripe with the commentary. I don't know. People know my feelings at this point. I prefer Terry and Nate. I know Nate isn't like majestic at commentary and people have their opinions. Really, I just prefer Terry.
Or Charlie Eisenhood.
Or yeah, Charlie Eisenhood's not bad either. But like I said, commentary is a very difficult job. And I'll also say I put a poll on Twitter and I wanted to know like do people like Terry and Nate or do they like Ian and Philo? Like 38% said Ian and Philo. So if that, I'm not going to sit here and act like we are all.
I just
people.
Don't understand. Like, I think 38% are deaf or listen with their TV.
I don't like
on
Ian and Philo very much.
Or maybe they just are like, maybe they just came from the Central Coast. Because I was a Central Coast fanboy.
I
love
too,
it.
Yeah.
But that's not going to make me like immediately love someone as a commentator.
I think that Ian's style is more suited for the Central Coast, like old school YouTube commentary game. I think that he's not as well suited.
To me, it just feels like he loses control of the broadcast.
It's also very tough because I think Philo steps on his toes a lot, and also Philo overrules him about 100 times.
Yeah. He gets bodied.
Yeah, like he just says something, and Philo goes, "No, actually, I don't think so." Ian,
justice
like,
for
all
Ian,
the time.
You know, justice yeah. for Ian. I think we replace Ian him with gets, Terry permanently, so that he doesn't have to deal with it anymore.
Ian gets bullied out there. So yeah, listen, commentary's hard. It is. And at the end of the day, I still enjoyed the coverage. Yeah. And having something to get a little worked up about on Twitter, it's fine.
It's a good time.
The other thing that that kept getting me going, though, was that every time Ancelo was on the screen, Philo had to mention that he was finished. To the point where I tweeted and I said, hey, can somebody tell me if Nicholas is finished or not? I haven't heard it yet on the broadcast. And some people got the joke and some people were like, no, yeah, he's finished.
Yeah.
Some people didn't get it.
I was proud of my dad joke. I tweeted after, what a finish, and spelt it F-I-N-N-I-S-H, and heck then put yeah. the Finland flag next to it.
It's tough because like some people love it when we go after commentary and trophies, but I'd say like in power rankings of the things that people get the most triggered about us talking about, it's like trophies and commentators are 1-2.
Ratings up there.
Yeah, but we don't really talk about ratings that much.
I don't know.
But yeah, they
we used to. Tough. It used to be that this was just the rating show back in the day.
It's a tough one out there.
Back in the Dizzy, but we got our way. No one talks about him really anymore. There was a lot of talk with Owen this weekend. I chose not to mention any of that because I'd be a hypocrite if I talked
You'd
about...
You'd be a hypocrite.
I'd be a hypocrite if I was like, oh, dude, did you see the this record that were broke because of the ratings
sound,
tied?
You sound like a hypocrite right now.
Dude, what, like, you're a hypogriff.
Well, I didn't tell you what records were broken.
What was the ratings that she shot?
Not telling you. See?
Tell me right now.
You're trying to make a hypocrite out of me.
No, I want
to
know. Just tell me, just like...
Yo, I'll go above or below. I'll play that game.
10:59.
Below.
I thought that's what she shot. That's why I was trying to put you
pretty
in a box.
Pretty sure. I think it was lower. I'm not going to say what she shot, but I think it was lower. Anyways, I literally had a line item on here, go off on the commentary, Trev. So I just had to figure out how to instigate that. It worked. Got him.
Listen, I only sent like 3 tweets about it. I think I was trying to be... I type out a lot of tweets.
Oh, the type out delete Twitters.
I type out a lot of tweets and then I just back off because I'm like, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like, I don't need to just continue dragging these guys through the mud. I'm trying to be a nice guy. But okay, here is my other observation. And I've always noticed this, but I think it's so funny. I made like a meme, like the draw 25 meme. It's like do this or draw 25, and then it's the guy holding 25 Uno cards. And mine was wear rain gear of any kind, and then or draw 25, and it's pro disc golfers with 25 cards. Because every time it rains, it's like disc golfers. Some of them do. Well, let's be clear, it's not all of them, but there's like this select group of guys who just they don't wear rain gear. Like it can be raining as hard as you want. They might stand under a tent by the tee pad, but they're just out there polo disc under the shirt like.
I think
it's just a disc golf.
I think
thing
it comes
general.
Out of like the disc golf culture.
It does.
Like, whenever you're like just like super obsessed with just playing disc golf,
they
and it's
don't
raining
care.
Outside, you're just like, I don't care.
And
I'm gonna go play in the rain anyway.
A lot of those guys that like I'm mentioning are very good
in
the rain.
I think
they just don't care.
I think it's a mentality thing. Because the most frustrating rain rounds is when you try to stay dry.
Yeah, that is true.
And you try to keep everything dry. It sucks. My best rain rounds are when I don't even bring a rain jacket. I'm like, screw it. My bag's going to, everything's going to be wet. Way better.
I am definitely not like a guy that, like, I think, I agree. Letting your disc get a little bit wet, especially like I've always been a wet putters guy. We talk about this a lot. I've asked like pros about this, like the wet putters versus, because a lot of pros will tell you like, if you're so focused on keeping your putters, especially super dry, if it gets just a little water on it, which it probably will, it's going to throw you off.
Mm-hmm.
If you just accept that they're a little bit wet, you'll putt better. Some people, that's their line of thought. I've always thought that way too. But I'm just like, I'm at least going to throw a rain jacket on, probably a rain fly for my bag. It's just like, it just cracks me up every time it rains and you like see some guys going, doing the most. Some guys are like umbrella, rain jacket, what I would do. Because the rain can fatigue you. If you're just standing out there in the rain for like a long time, it's heavy rain. It can just like kind of drag you down, dude. Not some of these guys, man. They're out there just in their normal attire, discs under their shirt, ready to go. They just got like 8 towels because they know they're going to get soaked.
You just
got
to get the disc dry enough that you can hold it. But it's then just accept you're going to get wet.
It just, every time it cracks me up, I'm just like, these guys don't care, man. And it switches cameras. You see raindrops just pelting down on them. No problem.
That's funny.
No problem.
Now, the Manufacturer Cup update through three events.
Oh, you mean the Discmania Cup?
Discmania is just continuing their dominance. Discmania, again, had their entire Sky team finish in the top 10 for the third consecutive event, which is crazy. They all finished top 4 this week, securing over half the available weekly points at 54 points going to Discmania. DGA got their first points of the year with Redalen and Marwi tying for 6th. And MVP, 3 events in, still at 0 points. Wow. Eagle's not in the field yet.
Where they at? No.
But Simon has been. And then about the time Eagle comes back is about the time Simon's going away for a little bit.
Not looking great for them.
So
good for Marweed. I'm glad to see Marweed playing good golf again because he kind of went away last year.
So the big movers here, we have obviously Discmania earning 54 points. They are now almost 60 points clear of second place, which is Discraft, who earned 16.5 points to get to 76.5. Prodigy stays in third, but earned 0 points. So they're at 26.5. So right now it's between Discraft and Discmania, which is kind of what you would have expected before the season. Innova moved up 3 spots, earning 15 points this weekend. They're now just 5.5 points back of Prodigy. Then you had DD falling 1, and DGA was able to overtake Mint, Castoplast, and
Battle for
West
Third
Side.
Is going to be sick.
And yeah, like I said, MVP still
I got to
say
about Marweed, I don't know about you guys, but every time I'm reminded that he's like a forehand dominant, like a really good forehand player, it always shocks me. I always forget because for some reason I associate the really good putters of the world with being crafty backhand guys, not like smash forehand guys. Andrew Marweed, when I hear his name, I don't think like, oh, he's a sick forehand player, even though like that is his game.
That's his thing.
And he is a monster with the forehand. But yeah, I hear really good putter, and I'm automatically just like, oh, crafty backhand.
Oh, because you just think of touch when you think of
putter. I've got stereotypes.
Wow.
Disc golf stereotypes.
That's big of you to admit.
Yeah.
Just want to put all right.
Bring that to the light.
I'm prejudiced.
It's time for Trevor's Trivia. Yeah. Trivia with Trevor.
Oh, hey, just put it out there, guys. Got to be honest. Okay.
That is interesting choice.
Yeah, I don't think you...
That I was
he's prejudiced I was, against forehand players putting.
Yeah, that's that word doesn't just have to be associated with racism.
No,
guys.
I was clearing up for Connor back there.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Connor
looked
like a ghost.
That's not the definition.
No, you just
of it.
Made an interesting choice to just like blank statement say, I am prejudiced.
I understand.
Like that's just an interesting choice to make to like you didn't have to say that.
No, I was prejudiced against Marwi.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, you guys understand. Thanks, guys. Just protect.
We're just protecting you.
No, you guys are the best. Okay.
I'll put a watermark over that so people can't clip it.
Just for saying that though, today's Trevor's Trivia is disc golf geography. Who won that tournament last year?
That's funny, Trevor.
Thank you, Big Con.
I'm actually really good at geography now.
It's actually not what we're doing at all.
Thank goodness.
We're gonna be talking about the frisbees.
You know I love that,
Trev. I know you do. So here I think we may have played a version of this game before, but it's been a little while.
Okay.
And the way that this game works is I've got the list of PDGA approved discs in front of me.
Okay.
And you guys are going to get one at a time and you're going to name a disc. And then so you're kind of on offense. So let's say Hunter just says zone.
Zone.
Connor then has to name a disc that was approved as close to the date that the zone was approved. And you're not going to say the date. You're just going to say the disc. And then he has to infer, okay, what year was that approved? What's another disc? And try to get as close as possible.
That's hard.
We'll go 3 rounds each.
Okay.
And just see who can.
Should
who can
we? Do it. Okay.
What is your suggestion? I'm open to suggestions.
I would just there. Like, I feel like if you just say, I don't know, if you say like one of the first discs made, then it just gets weird because it's like, well, but it doesn't matter.
I mean,
that was what was going. That was
I think
going on.
I think you said one of the first discs ever made. It would be kind of easy because
that's what I'm saying. But yeah,
you're right. You want to name one that is difficult. Okay, Connor, why don't you lead off for us here?
Yes, sir, Trevor. I'm going to go with the. Let's go with the West Side King.
Great one. That's a great one. Because, like, who the heck knows when that came out?
The West Side King was out by the time I was in college. So we're just going to try to get something. We'll just go with the Dynamic Discs Judge.
Nice.
Try to get somewhere around that, like, 2012, 2013 mark.
The King was approved in 2010. I believe the Judge is 2012, but we'll double check. Or it might have been 2013. The Judge was 2012.
Okay, I'm happy
with
that.
2 years off. So two,
that's fine.
Hunter has 2 points. You don't want to have points.
I didn't realize the King had been around that long.
Yeah, yeah, I knew it was.
Well, so they actually, what's funny is they actually
like
have
a 2016.
They actually have a separate mold approved for the VIP Air version of the King for whatever reason.
Well, that's that one was 2012. Oh, never mind. That's not the one I was talking about.
But the original one was 2010. Okay.
Give Hunter, me the.
I'm just going to let this, I'm going to just like feel whatever you say, I'm just going to feel it. Like in my heart.
And Cassoplast Berg.
The Cassoplast Berg. I'm going to go with the AVR3.
Oh.
I like that.
I like that.
This could be good.
That feels right.
That does feel right.
The Berg was 2015. That feels very good. No, that feels.
That does. That,
it's a little.
No, yeah.
It's
yeah,
gonna it'll be, it'll probably be 2 years.
It's gonna,
I had a proto it. One in college, and yeah. I graduated high school in 2015.
It's going to be a couple years off.
Okay.
You say AVR 3, right?
Yeah.
I just searched AVR. Let's just see if AVR will pull it up, because AVR 3. Okay. AVR 3, 2017.
Yeah, okay.
Two to two after one round. Good job,
Oh,
guys.
It's my turn now.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the.
These boys are historians.
The Dynamic Disc Raider.
Okay.
The Raider.
I don't know when the Raider came out.
I feel like, I mean, 2012 is as old as it could be, but I feel like it was a probably like 2017 mold, if I had to guess, which would be, that would have been the AVR3 when that came out.
Hot dog.
What else was coming out around that time?
Yeah. When we were just a bunch of college kiddos.
Give me the Mystere.
The Mystere.
I can't give it to you. I don't have one.
So the Raider was a 2019 disc.
Okay, I like
wow,
this better.
That
than.
Recent.
I think the Mystere, trying to spell Mystere.
M-Y-S-T-E-R-E.
I got it. 2015.
Oh,
really?
4 points off there. Put you to a total of six. Serve back to con.
Hit
How's
me
a with
deer.
Almost 10 years old. That's crazy.
Coming up on the 10 year Mysteres. Dude, the 10 year Mystere drop.
They're
gonna
go.
Imagine if every company.
I can't wait for that Ledgestone drop, dude.
We'll have to look at that and see like what molds have a 10 year. I mean, obviously the Envy I think just had is
I
having
think
10 years.
Just had 10 years. Yeah.
Wonder what else has 10 years.
Way to give it up. I was gonna go Envy.
Has the Envy been around for almost 10 years?
It's yeah.
Crazy. It doesn't feel like it's been around that
That's
long.
Crazy.
Mainly just because like I didn't really think about MVP at all.
No one did. You know what? Why not? Let's go the MVP wave.
The MVP wave.
Surfing on that wave.
I'm going to go with the Innova Colossus.
You guys are giving me some hard words to spell.
That should be the new game.
Where I don't know why
figure
I
out how to
that
turn
out.
All of Trevor's games on the
yeah, that'd be so funny. That'd be sick. So
like just when we do the eBay games, we just had to make them do the like hardest map.
The wave
possible.
Came yeah. out in 2015.
Uh oh.
The Colossus came out in 2015. Bada bing,
you're
bada
Boyd
bada
right
you're
here.
Up by four.
Up by four.
Boyd
one
Senior
round
right
to
here.
Go.
Okay,
Hunter
I'm going to go with
Hunter
the...
A clutch up. You guys are going all around the same time period, which
need
is
to dial in here.
The Innovation Discs, also known as Innova...
Oh, my gosh.
Wolf.
Ooh, that...
Wolf is old as crap.
Yeah, that's a little more old.
Give me as old as time.
The, I feel like that's an 80s disc. But I don't know. It could get into the 90s.
That's, I know. That's what I really don't know. I gave you one that would confuse me.
I just thought of a new segment that we're going to have to do right after this.
Okay.
It's really, it's actually very important.
No, I'm going to go with let me go with the end of a shark.
That's
so
smart.
The Wolf was 1999. It was February 14th,
okay,
1999.
I think I'm going to be 7 years off.
The Shark, 1989.
Oh, 10 years off.
Dang. 10 years. You need to do something miraculous right
now. No.
Hey, the segment that we definitely need
how
to
many
do
more
after this
is
figure, we need to figure out what, if any, molds were approved on our birthdays.
Oh, that's fun.
Because,
oh, that's fun.
Come on.
Our birthday dates. Because
I just noticed that one, the Wolf was only 8 days off of mine in 1999. So, like, we've got to know.
That's fun.
Crazy.
Okay.
So, like, this is the last one? It's just Hunter saying this to me? Okay.
This is it.
Give me.
Just got to get close here.
The Gateway.
Oh, good idea.
Diablo.
That could be,
I mean, it could be anything. That's crazy. I'm going to go with a Mako 3. I'm trying to decide if I want to go Mako 3 or Mako. I'm going to stick with Mako 3. Yeah.
It's a good thing you did. Because the Diablo was 2017 and the Mako 3 is 2017.
Oh my
God. Connor's unbeatable.
Normal Mako is 2009, so you still would have won.
Okay. But, well, I should have went with the Raging Inferno.
Okay. I would have no idea. It is now time.
Diablo, I couldn't remember when it came out.
It's now time to try and figure out what discs were approved on our
birthday. How do we possibly figure that out?
You just go to we'll go to the last page of discs and then just go from there because it won't take that long.
I mean, that's a long time. There's got to be a better way.
Look, I'm already at our birthdays. I'm already like right. It's literally a couple pages from the back is where all of our birthdays will be because there wasn't that many discs back then.
That's fair.
What year were you born? 97?
97, baby.
And it was May 5th?
He's a 97.
May 7th.
Baby.
How dare you
May
not 7th? Know my birthday?
Okay, so this should be your page right here.
That hurts.
Okay, so the year of 1997.
Just go to May.
May.
7th.
There's only one disc approved in May of 1997.
Was it on my birthday?
7th.
All right, well, then I don't have a birthday
May
disc.
May 12th, and it was the Apollo from Whammo.
I don't have a birthday disc.
I don't have a birthday disc either because I'm also in May.
But you're 99.
That's true.
Or
no, I'm 98.
98. Yeah, May of 98.
Trevor, and by Trevor, I mean Hunter. I'm sorry that you don't have a birthday
there
disc.
There were zero discs approved in May of 98.
Hey, Connor.
Wow.
I'm sorry you don't
you
have
were,
a birthday disc.
You were thank closest you. To the Discraft XL. That was in April of 98.
I did
Connor
love
that
disc.
XL.
I did love that disc.
Okay, let's see. 99. So February of 99 had two discs, and they were both February 14th, Valentine's Day, and it was the Ching Sports Bomb and the End of a Wolf. Nobody has birthday discs.
Well, Silas. When's your birthday?
What's your birthday? Yeah, he has a better chance because he's younger than us. June
30th. What year?
03?
2001.
01.
June 30th, 01. Okay. Social? Just kidding.
Yes, the answer is yes, he is.
No birthday.
No disc. Birthday.
The closest disc. That he was.
I think that disc golf
he was in
isn't
the same,
quite.
Like, he was in the same month as the CE Firebird, CE AVR, and CE T-Bird.
Wow. Dang, Silas,
what's,
that's sick.
Clayton was March 25th, and he's of 2001. It has to be.
March 25th. Is he March 24th?
Dang!
The dragon from Innova. So this is a legit
disc golf
thing.
Is too young.
If
for
you're
this.
Born around the time we were born, having a birthday disc is pretty rare. I can't believe I've never even thought of this.
That's tough. No.
Let us know
discs.
In the comments if what your birthday disc is. If you're lucky enough to have one.
Yeah.
I would say like it once you're born. I mean, if you're born nowadays. Oh, I gotta look and see. I just had a kid.
That's ooh, what I was gonna call. Say. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Like what? What?
Go to August 5th, 2022.
I already got her PDGA number. Not
that's
true.
Not true. Trevor didn't have his own. I have a PGA number. Go August 5th, 2022. Uh-huh. Actually, that might be easier to go from one backwards.
Okay, let me look for... So, my daughter... Man, this year I had a bunch of discs on my birthday. My daughter did not have a birthday disc.
Dang.
What about... So, I'll just go back to get to Brooks and Luca and see if they had birthday discs. This is just a quest now. He's August 2022. What day?
Mm-hmm. 5th.
There's so many more discs these days. Almost to 2022.
Imagine, sorry,
I feel like whatever
thinks.
This is, he's going to have to throw. Okay, here we go. September.
Like
August. What day? What day?
5th.
Nope. August.
Dang!
August 1st wow. And August 8th. Okay, last. Brooks is the last chance. December of 2021.
Come on, Brooks. Don't let us down.
December 30th.
If he has one, this is going to be his identity.
I know, because like, it's his, so hard.
Yeah,
it's so
hard. His name.
Oh my gosh. He has two, three, so many birthday discs.
What?
Wow. Well, I guess end of the year.
Can
we?
Can I have one of his birthday discs?
Two from XCOM discs, but then he has, he has five. He has the Birdie Discs Marvel, the Wing It Disc Golf Stratosphere, and the Discmania Rainmaker.
The Rainmaker.
Wow. It's approved on his birthday. So Brooks is the only one with the birthday disc. We need to pull the rest of the company.
That's selfish jerk.
I'm going to throw it in Slack.
Throw
is
it
that
in
okay?
Slack. Yeah.
Throw it in Slack.
That's actually great.
If you guys want to join our Slack, if you're listening to the podcast, you want to join our Slack.
That's actually great because then I can send another text message and be like, hey, guys, there's something important in Slack. Please join it.
Okay. That's a fun game. I know everybody is probably already doing it, but if you haven't, you need to look up and see. Just Google PDGA approved discs. Click the link that you
just
see.
Just look up.
And then just scroll back and try to find your birthday disc. If you have like a sick birthday disc, like the T-Bird, I mean, your life is set. You're going to be a millionaire.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
You just have to figure out how to make money off
that.
I figure out how to make money off this thing.
Let's go through. I'll quickly. I ran.
Just too good.
Ran a collegiate tournament this past weekend, the Flamethrower. And
throw any flames?
There was no. There's a lot of flames, actually.
They should really
Liberty
start
swept.
That tournament with a. Mm.
And by they, you mean me. That's what I do next time. I'll yell 2 minutes. I'll just go.
Yeah, hopefully they'll
see when they hear me.
Hopefully they'll hear the flamethrower.
Y'all hear the static? No, it's not gonna be a flamethrower. It's just gonna be me.
Oh, nice.
Did you get a Zippo out?
Hey, no.
You get a bushwhacker badge for that.
Yeah, baby. That's fun. Round ruiner.
I'm a round bot. No, it's a. What is it? A round. What is it? Round killer.
Yeah.
I'm a round killer.
Anyways, the whole reason I wanted to bring it up was because we're tough on the PDGA on this show.
We're tough.
We're tough on the PDGA.
Oh, are you about to give them their flowers?
We hold them to a high standard as the organization that runs 90% of disc golf, I feel like, should be held
to. Yeah, and they charge
a
billion bucks.
But this weekend, original plan was going to be able to have tee times for singles round because we wanted the collegiate event to be as big as possible. It was people's last chance to get into nationals, blah, blah, blah. Change of course schedule made it where I couldn't have tee times, but I already had over 90 players registered for singles. If you do your math, that's more than fivesomes. It's fivesomes plus a ghost card is where I was at.
Hot dang.
And we were playing New London. So raise your hand. You at home too, participate. Show of hands if you want to play in a fivesome on New London. Yeah. Yeah. No one. No one on earth.
I did not raise my hand, Hunter. No, I did not.
Yeah. No one on earth wants to do that. So one team dropped out, making it where I had 88 players, which meant still was going to be fivesomes, but I think it'd be like two foursomes. But then I came up with the idea of pool play, where I was like, hey, because
let's leave this disc golf course
first
and play pool instead. Pool
no. But for collegiate disc golf, it's very weird because you have four teams.
That's just water polo.
You have two teams, right? And you put them on the same hole. So there's eight players on a hole because of the way college doubles works. But pool play is meant so that like pool A can be playing this course, pool B is playing this course, then they switch, and then you re-merge them. But I needed to be playing pool play on the exact same course at the exact same time. Just one playing doubles, one playing singles. So I called the PDGA, explained it to them. Ben was the first guy that picked up the phone.
What up, Ben?
Super nice. Went above and beyond of like, A, confirming I'm not breaking any PDGA rules. B, making sure we can make this happen. And then he had their IT guy reach out, which his name is Todd. And then Todd went as far as like he explained it all to me, how it was going to work, but then set it up for me so that I didn't even have to set it up. And then just got on a Zoom call and explained to me like the one step I had to do.
That's
and
pretty
that
helpful.
Was it. And then we had live scoring error happen because of the pool play, basically. It was The PDGA system is not meant to handle college
PDGA
disc golf.
PDGA Live was drowning
and is
in
not
pool
meant
play.
Not meant to handle pool play. And I emailed the PDGA, and they found the problem. And within like an hour, so while the round was still going on, they fixed it.
That's my membership. That's my membership dollars at work in the community.
I just wanted to point it out. The PDGA, I need to give them their flowers. They bent over backwards to help me this weekend.
Would you
and
say
it was well worth
so
it?
So you would
awesome.
Probably say we should all pay more for our membership.
I wouldn't say that.
So, okay, you inferred it.
Here's the thing. I've heard Hunter take a lot of calls in my time working here at Foundation.
Yeah.
And he always sits right where he is now.
Hi.
He always sits on that set right behind me whenever he Clayton takes calls.
Yeah, he's definitely up front.
Clayton just joined Slack.
Clayton is the best of the retail employees because he was the first to join Slack. So if you're a retail employee and you're watching this, I'm sorry. Much like this weekend, Clayton just dunked on you.
Oh, you're not allowed to dunk in disc golf.
Sure, so. If you're close enough to the basket.
Okay. Yeah. As long as both your feet are still on the ground.
Correct, right? As Connor learned.
Yes.
Imagine hanging onto the rim of the basket after dunking.
Some elevated baskets are high enough.
Dude, next time we play an elevated basket that's high enough, we got to slam on that thing.
I just heard Hunter was on a call with a guy and he was really happy and he was really thankful. That was the end of my story.
It changed his mood dramatically.
I went from stressed to happy.
I've never heard him be so grateful on a phone call in my life.
Right before he got on that call, he was on a different call with his boss, as in his wife. And he was like, I'm not making out of here in the next millennium. This is going to take forever. It's broken. And then after that call, he was like, oh, you're kidding me? Just click, 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 boom, boom, boom. We're in there.
All true stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was. Sometimes that happens, especially when you're explaining to your wife that like you feel like something's gonna take you forever. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden like it doesn't. You're just like, oh.
So I went and played around a golf.
Yeah. So it's like then I usually go fishing.
No, but I wanted to get the PGA as a tournament director who started. Pre-tournament manager, you had tournament manager, but I was managing stuff in an Excel spreadsheet and uploading it to the PDGA to how I now run tournaments with Tournament Central. The PDGA has made tournament director's life so easy.
You direct a lot of tournaments at this point. People need to start considering you the tournament director you are. I think we should lobby, Connor. Let's lobby for Hunter to get into the PDGA Hall of Fame.
Okay. I would love to.
I don't know how we've never...
My resume is...
Shut your mouth! Don't you dare be sarcastic.
He's the first one
You've done more for this sport than many of
And
a
he's
man.
The first one to ever implement pool play into collegiate disc golf.
It's also not true. Because I discovered when I was...
In
I
collegiate
came up with
disc
it,
golf?
I came up with it in my head.
No, in collegiate disc golf.
I was like thinking through it. I came up with it in my head. And then I like started emailing the PDGA. And then a guy from Auburn DM'd me. It was like, hey, a tournament I just played down here used pool play. Could you do that and open it up? So that we could get in.
And then you didn't let him in.
I didn't let him in solely because I hadn't had the phone call yet to know it was going to work.
Mm.
And so like I was still in the process of like emailing them.
You're on their
like,
hit list.
It should work, but I was like, hey, if I let you in, I'm back to fivesomes with a ghost card, and that makes everyone else in the event suffer.
I think
so. Like, I'm sorry.
I think if we do this whole shindig long enough, we can get you into the Hall of Fame. Absolutely.
Well, he's the first person ever to incorporate pool play at a collegiate event that didn't have Auburn.
In all seriousness,
Roll Tide.
You know, people get into the Hall of Fame for like impact on the sport more than playing. Honestly,
yeah.
Come on, let's start Hunter for a Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
let's just start a foundation Hall of Fame, and this is the inaugural class.
I don't know if I'm. I don't know if I'm getting in some of the sanctions.
He might not be first ballot.
It might be like a Reggie Bush situation where I win the award and then they take it back.
One of our first rules: we don't let people with prejudice.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
very good point.
That would be the first thing the committee brings up when they're trying to get it revoked.
That immediately rules. I'm gonna
take the Hall of Fame jacket.
I've
right
got
off
this
my
clip
back.
Of you, and you just say, "I am prejudiced."
Trevor, explain this.
Come on, guys. I almost said six different things that were way worse than that this episode. So
let's go through our top 10. Now there are a few events.
We got a little work to do here.
First off, FPO, I think we're already kind of spot on. We got Kristen 1, Own 2, and then we have Holland, Missy, Evelina. Only thing I could think is maybe move up Evelina because she does have a win, but Missy's been playing good.
I kind of like doing a hot swap with Evelina and Holland.
Okay, I don't mind that.
That's kind of what I'm feeling right now. Speaking of that, Silas, did the NAS thing work? Sorry, guys. This is important. Did it work?
This is not important.
Okay, just had to check on that real quick. We got a server. It's big. All right, MPO.
I'm going to need Statmando up for this. I need that Statmando.
Nice. So the big thing that's going to happen is Isaac Robinson's going to fall off a cliff here. Love him to death, but hasn't been playing great, and he's way inflated.
What does that mean to love someone to death?
How far back?
I love him till death do us part.
How far into 2023?
That's what we told each other.
Where do we want to cut it off for 2023?
Oh, yeah, we got to decide our cutoff date. I don't... Honestly,
or
Hunt,
just start, just do 2024.
Do we just go from... Do we just scratch right now?
I think we just go...
Do we just, like, digest what's happened so far and just spit out our gut top 10?
We could.
You because do that? I think we should, because this is a new season.
Here's my Anthony Barella's number one player in the world right now.
I think let's go through our list right now, and wow, anybody that based on this season what's happened wouldn't be in the top 10, let's cut.
Okay.
So Isaac Robinson, because he wouldn't be in our top 10 right now. I mean, double check me, but like,
I would say, I think he hasn't had one start. Sneaky good performance.
I think we just need it. Like, I'm okay once we get far enough into the season, we start looking back a certain amount of weeks. But I think we need to digest this season as it is.
He went 6th at chess.com, 47th at Waco, and then open at Austin.
I don't think
he went 29th. So yeah, not top 10.
Yeah, not
just Isaac out of
yet.
There.
Hasn't been yet.
Okay, Calvin Heimberg.
Calvin's fine. Gannon's fine. Kyle's fine. Ricky's fine. Matty O is fine. Simon, gone.
Gone.
AB, fine. Gossage, fine. Rodolin, we'll have to look at him, but he should be okay.
I think he's fine. He just came in like
third. So we just have a couple spots that we need to fill in, which I think is good. Because I think we need to,
okay. So two, we need to find two players. Marweed's been having an okay start to his season.
He has.
Let's look at Marweed's first. He went 40th, 42nd.
Never mind. We're done.
I take it all back. He had one good event.
Well, let's start here, Hunt, because there's a couple guys that are clearly
Ezra Robinson.
Yeah, let's take a look at him.
Let's take a look at him. Oh, absolutely. 16th, 7th, and then he just came in 12th.
So that's pretty good. He's
in the top 10. Ezra Robinson, welcome to the top 10. You are now the better Robinson.
Wow, for now, yeah.
Is he the better Ezra?
Joseph Anderson. Top 10 guy,
Joey Buckets,
for sure.
As I've been informed, is his nickname, and love that.
Trevor also didn't know he wore bucket
also,
hats.
Also, love that he throws Castoplast, because it's been a little bit since we've had good Castoplast representation on tour. That's fun. That's fun that he throws Castoplast. He also had a sick throw-in yesterday.
Joey
that's
Buckets cool. went 9th, 27th, 12th.
Yeah, he's a dog.
I feel like let's compare him to like Evan Smith.
We're
going
to have to make sure we're not missing somebody low key, because like both him and Ezra have good starts, but there maybe could be somebody who did better.
Is Evan Smith not in there?
Wow.
They don't have Evan Smith. They only have Evan Scott.
Didn't Ezra?
Which is the better Evan?
Evan Smith.
Didn't Ezra Aderholt come in like second recently?
Let's go Aderholt to Anderson. They don't have Joseph Anderson in here?
Dude, Stat Mando might. What are we going to do? What are we going to do if we can't compare people?
How do they not have.
He's actually better for us, because then we can just start saying stuff.
How do they not? What is going on?
Are you in the wrong database right now?
No, Stat Mando. This is MPO, because like Brody Smith comes up when I type Smith.
I'm in the Stat Mando database. That's not even a joke. I'm in there. And somehow Evan Smith
is. Well, Trevor Staub's not.
Oh, no, I'm on the head-to-head. Oh, that's why. Because if you do player search, it's a different database than head-to-head. So like,
how are they not in?
I bet if you searched in the player profiles, you'd probably. That's where you find me and you.
I don't think I'm in it. I just said John Anderson. Who the frick's John Anderson?
You totally are, I thought.
Thomas. Oh, yeah, I am right there. Look at me.
I told you, we're both in there.
Ooh, picked a college picture of me. That's fun.
Yeah.
All right, back to what's important here. Anderson. Joseph.
Yeah, season. They just haven't added him into the head-to-head.
Open link in new tab. Player profile. We need to search Smith Evan.
That doesn't do that way.
Evan Smith.
Evan Smith. Yeah, this is the best Evan.
Last 12 months, he has 1 win, 5 podiums, 8 top 10s, 19 cash. Whereas that doesn't help me, because that's not just on the Pro Tour.
Well, I think we gotta start with our gut.
I'm going to go with our gut. Joseph Anderson is better than Evan Smith.
He is.
With my gut.
I like our gut. We'll let the comments prove us wrong.
So do we like this 10 then? But I think we need to reorder with these 10 players.
Yeah.
Anthony Barella is number one player in the world.
I would have to say yes, because he has. Well, it's between him and Gannon. Between realistically, I'm okay.
Okay, you want to go head to head him versus Gannon?
For
this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could probably do it off the top of my head, because they've both been so. I think Gannon's first tournament maybe wasn't crazy, but then obviously win, and then AB did finish above him though at this event. So it probably still is.
It's a 2-2-1
this year.
Comparing them this year.
Oh, because they both played Memorial.
Both with
too.
One win. Oh, no. Gannon Burr has 2 wins, one being Memorial, but we'll throw that out.
That doesn't count.
So they both came in 4th, the Open at Austin.
Oh,
Burr won. AB came in 4th at chess.com, and then AB came in 1st at chess.com, and Gannon Burr came in 4th.
Same player. I think we have to go Gannon based on history then. Like, over time, Gannon has been better, so we'll go Gannon, then AB. Gosh, man, what a day to be alive that AB is second in the power rankings. It's been a great season.
And with a legit argument to be first.
Oh, absolutely.
Calvin Heimberg should not be third. He should honestly, for right now, probably be closer to 8th or 10th.
Yeah,
because just because he had a rough first event, took the second event off, and just came back.
I'm down. I'm down with putting Kyle
Klein
next.
Third or Ricky. Let's go Kyle Klein versus Ricky.
Yeah, because Rick just took a week off, which makes it tough. But he did have, he had decent events. Did he have
Ricky,
top three?
Klein's 1-2, 2-1 against him. Yeah. That includes All-Star, though. But he went, so Ricky came in second at chess.com. Kyle Klein came in fifth. Then Klein came in seventh at Waco. Ricky came in 10th. And then Kyle just came in second
here.
No,
Kyle's earned that spot.
So then we go Kyle in the third spot, Ricky in the fourth spot.
Yeah. I think Matty O probably fits there.
So where
fifth.
Do we put, let's put, where we put Heimberg?
I think above Gossage.
You put him in six right here?
I think so. We'll go.
Gossage, let's compare him to Gossage. Let's put, let's go Calvin.
Comparing him to Gossage is going to give you, he lost to Gossage on the first event, wasn't there the second event, beat him this event. That's what you're going to get.
But like by how much?
I think he took 29. I don't know what Gossage took at the last
I'm a man event. Of numbers. I'm a numbers man.
You are a man of numbers.
Mm-hmm. So Aaron is 2-1. That uses the All-Star weekend. I hate that. They really need to remove that. The Open at Austin, Gossage came in 16th. Chess.com, Heimberg came in 34th. So I think he should be below Gossage.
That's fine.
But I'm fine with him being above Cole because the history has to play a little bit of a factor.
It has to.
And Heimberg had an absolute.
That looks good.
I like this.
Let's
so
start
we have,
here. It's a good starting point.
We have Gannon Burr 1, Anthony Barella 2, Kyle Klein 3, Ricky Wysocki 4, Matty O 5. Nicklaus isn't on this list.
Oh my gosh.
That's who we're about to forget.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh gosh.
Woo.
We were about to look really stupid.
That was about to be tough. I was, well,
Connor,
I was thinking,
dude.
I was thinking to the shield.
Sorry, guys.
I was thinking protect the shield, and I was like, oh my gosh. The people are the shield's missing. The sky team.
Our sky team
fallen.
Who do we take out?
It's got to be one of the Cole, Ezra, or Joseph Anderson. Let's go.
Oh my gosh.
I can't compare Joseph Anderson. Might have to be him
just take Joseph Anderson out.
I think Joseph Anderson has to because he's not in the Stat Mando.
If Stat Mando, we're holding. Yeah. Just put him in the player to the head to head, please, Stat Mando. Thank you.
Okay. So now Nick Loss. Let's go Antela. Is he not in here? He is. Thank goodness. Versus Redolin. Let's compare them this season. Nicklaus is 3-0 against him.
Nicklaus has actually been low-key very good this season.
Okay, so now we need to go above that. Let's go to, let's compare him to Matty O.
Wasn't he in contention?
He's 2-1 against Matty O. He won open at Austin. His worst finish is 9th place.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll say, actually,
this
Nicklaus
guy is
should
be
very high.
Let's compare him to Ricky.
He should be right above Rick, I think.
Comparing to
he
Ricky.
He should be right above Kyle. No, because
they're 1-1.
He needs to be above Kyle. Because, he's got it. That's where he needs to sit.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because Kyle doesn't have a win.
That's true. 2-1 against him. He hasn't finished outside the top 10. Yeah. Okay. So he needs to be the third best player in the world. That's where he needs to sit.
You could even argue above AB because AB. No.
No, I don't think he could.
No, I don't think he
could. Because AB's coming like.
Unless it would be on recency, but okay, yeah. Phew, that was close.
We almost missed the third best player in the world.
We almost did it stupid. We were getting screamed at.
Yeah. That was like when
we. Delete your comment.
That was like when we missed.
AB is the biggest choke
of
the year.
I didn't know we were going to say his name.
As far as...
that was one of the dumbest things we've ever done.
That was easily the dumbest thing we've ever done.
Yeah, we missed the biggest choke of all time for choke of the year.
And it was like, the most iconic one that ever happened.
Brutal.
That was pretty sick.
Top 10 sits Gannon Burr 1, AB 2, Nicklaus 3, Kyle Klein 4, Ricky Wysocki 5, Matty O 6, Aaron Gossage 7, Calvin Heimberg 8, Cole Redolin 9, Ezra Robinson 10.
I like it there for now.
I'm happy with that. Silas select time.
Another guy who could sneak in is Chris Dickerson.
He played solid.
Playing decent golf. Happy for him. All right, Con. What do you think is in this magical box?
Who's got it? Con's got it.
This is a Discraft Raptor.
Oh, my gosh. That could be what it is. Should we just all surround one brand? Nah. Just threw that idea out.
Stupid.
You can't use your x-ray vision, huh?
I'm just trying to think.
Hunter, that's actually pretty criminal.
I'm going to take the Discmania Magician.
I want a zone.
Well, I know what you want, but like, what do you think it is?
Discraft zone. I want a zone. Oh, it was a Toro.
My heart dropped.
My
heart dropped. I thought it was a zone. I thought he had just got it. I was sick to my stomach.
If you would have chosen the other podcast, I would have got it.
Dang, that's crazy.
I thought it was a zone. That was crazy. I forgot that we were in the Toro. Narrow escape right there.
Oh man, I would have flaunted that so hard. Y'all would have invited me lunch for months.
Wait,
huh?
Is that a rule?
No,
it is now.
Just because we got flaunted he was just saying, on so
yeah,
hard,
he just said he was gonna.
He would flaunt us so hard.
I flaunted y'all so hard that y'all had to buy lunch to shut me up.
Well,
dang it. Well, that's the show.
That was crazy.
Hopefully, y'all enjoyed. We'll have a grip lock preview for the U.S. Women's this week, and then we'll be back here Monday to let you know what went down.